Like all your attention this evening to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 7. Luke, chapter 7. The verses that we will cover, we'll not read all of them at one time. We'll just read them as we go through because there's several of them. But it'll begin, the story is from verse 36 down through verse 50. And in this story, let me just say before we really get into the first point, that there are two kind of sinners in the world. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but there are really two kinds of sinners. There's those that know it and those that don't. You got some people, and there's no doubt in their mind, they know that they're sinners. But there's other people that want to qualify it. Well, I'm not that bad. I mean, I'm not like a drug addict. I'm not like a murderer. I'm not like somebody that's a kidnapper. You know, I'm not a drug dealer. I'm not that. And so they kind of feel like that they are good and they are righteous, even though they may not be perfect. That's kind of the way that the Pharisees were. They knew that they were not perfect, but they thought that their righteousness was going to be enough where that God would kind of overlook the rest of it. And we're going to see that attitude in one of these characters tonight that we see. And so right away, the first thing I want us to see is I want us to see what I'm calling the slight. Now, when you're slighted, that means you're disrespected. Somebody slights you, that means that they're not giving you the respect that you ought to have or that they would normally give to people. I want you to look with me at verse 36. And it says, "And one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. And he went into the Pharisee's house and sat down to meat," or sat down to eat. Well, the first thing that I want you to know is that there was an invitation. There is a Pharisee. There is a home, which is really it's not the house structure by itself, but there's actually a courtyard. When I think about this, I think about some of the places that I have seen that I have visited when I have gone to Israel. It's the same way in a lot of places today. I remember the first time that I went in 13, I went with the Christian Jew Foundation, went with about 30 of those people. And at night, we would have Messianic Jews come and they would play music and we would sing and we would have a meal together. And on one particular night, we didn't stay at the hotel and have a room and have a meeting. We went to an apartment complex, and in one of those apartments, I guess it probably more accurately would be called a condo. There was a condo that the Christian Jew Foundation had purchased so that when their people went to Jerusalem, they didn't have to have a hotel. They had a place where they could stay. It was uptown. I mean, it was nice. Had like three levels to it. And I mean, it was really nice. But one of the things that I noticed around the outside of it, there was a wall that was made of concrete. It was painted beautiful color, had some shrubberies that were around it, but it was a high wall so that you didn't have people that could get in easily. And one of the things that they did was they set up the food on what we would call the patio. And so you would have these people that would go by and they would get this food. Well, that wall around that condo is what I want you to visualize tonight. There's a house in the middle, there is a wall around it, and there is a gate that would have been left open. That is the structure and the type of property that Jesus has been invited to go into and to have a meal. Now, the meal is, in Eastern culture, it's where that you would you would lay down. It would be a short table, and you would lay down, you would be on your left elbow, and you would eat with your right hand. Your feet would be stuck out behind you. It would be disrespectful for somebody to sit there with their feet crossed Indian style. It would be a disrespectful type thing, and so they would be laid out, and the feet would be back here. And so we have this man. Now, where does the slight come in? I want you to look with me at verse 44. In verse 44, it says, and he turned to the woman, and he said, seest thou this woman? I'll use that phrase again in a moment. He said, I entered into thine house. Thou gavest me no water for my feet. So what is that? That means that when Jesus walked to this man's house, his feet would have been dirty. They would have been dusty. They didn't have boots back then. They wore sandals. And so you've got this man, and he did not even offer the courtesy that guest would have been given. What was that? Well, do you remember the story of foot washing in the Gospels? Where that you have Jesus, and what did he do? He girded himself with a towel. He took a basin of water and he knelt down and began to wash the disciples' feet. Why is that? Because when they were walking to their location, they had dust on their feet. Now, when Jesus was going to this man's house, most likely he had probably already bathed. It would have been a very, very important thing from a courtesy standpoint. He would have bathed, but as you walk, your feet get dirty. And so Jesus says, you offered me no water. You did not even give me common courtesy. He didn't just stop there. If you keep reading down in verse number 45, it says, thou gavest me no kiss. What was that about? Well, if someone was considered to be a friend, when they came, what would they do? They would kiss them on the cheek. It was not a sexual type thing. It was a friendship type thing. The Apostle Paul told one of the churches in the New Testament, he said, greet the brethren with a holy kiss. That is a custom that is in the East, where that you would embrace and you would kiss on the cheek. We used to have a guy in this church. I had his funeral a few years ago. Brother George Hinkle, and on two or three different occasions, freaked me out the first time he did it, but on two or three different occasions, we would embrace, and the next thing I know, he'd give me a kiss on my cheek. Well, that was a little weird for me coming from America, all right? But his background, that was just the way that people greeted. And so I knew that he didn't mean anything, you know, evil about it. And so I just finally took it as, you know, he loves me. I'm a friend of his. He has confidence in me. Well, he says, no kiss did you give me. In other words, he wasn't counting Jesus as somebody that was special. Well, if you keep reading, it says in verse 46, my head with oil thou didst not anoint. In other words, you did not even, as an act of kindness and as an act of paying honor, you invited me to come to your home, but you did not take any type of perfume, scented oil, and even put that on my head where that there would be a fragrance that would be through the atmosphere, through the air. You didn't do that. And so why did he have him come? Well, to be honest with you, I think that what he was doing is I think that he was probably trying to basically kind of do a little detective work. Wanted to find out if all the things that he had heard about Jesus from his fellow Jews and his fellow Pharisees were true, and he was kind of trying to establish it in his own mind. And so he was not giving him the common courtesy of water. He was not giving him the courtesy of a kiss. He was not giving him the courtesy of any anointing oil. He's just simply there, and he's kind of trying to observe, maybe ask questions, have a little bit of a conversation, and basically see if he can figure out really what this rabbi is all about. That's probably what his motivation is. And so I think he's trying to confirm the opinion that his buddies back at the synagogue and the temple probably shared. And so there is a slight that is there. But there is a second thing that we see. You see that back in verse 37. And behold, a woman. Now, it does not give her name. It just says that there is a woman in the city which was a sinner. I like the fact that it says that she was a sinner. Now, I know that when people say she was a sinner, they mean that she still is a sinner. But I like the fact that the word that's used here is was. That's past tense. Because ultimately, you're going to see that she is now a saint and not a sinner. Well, it says that this woman, unnamed, who was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment. She hears that Jesus is nearby her. She knows this man's house. She's probably seen the beautiful fence. She's probably seen the ornate gate that is usually open in the day and closed at night. And so remember now the fence that I mentioned earlier. Here she is. She walks to that gate that is open. Why is it open? It's open because in those days, in the middle of that courtyard would be where the food would have been set. The couches that the men reclined on would have been there. The table would have been just in front of them. But around the wall, there would be seats, and poor people could come and sit and at least listen to the conversation. They may have even been able to maybe get some scraps that were left. Whenever I think about that, I think about the man that was full of sores that laid at the rich man's gate in Luke 16, and how that he wanted the scraps that the dogs didn't eat. Even the dogs eat from under his table. He was wanting to have anything. The poor people were always trying to get anything that they could, and so the door would be left open so that there could be people that would be able to sit around. And this lady had no intention of going and sitting. She had one purpose. And what was that? She brought an alabaster box of ointment. Now, an alabaster box, how many of you have ever gone to a cave and they've had lights on inside and you see these things hanging down? They're called stalactites. I hope I pronounced that right. You got these stalactites, and that is the type of material that these alabaster boxes were made of. Sometimes it would be painted pottery, but it would always be something that could be sealed. And when you see the word ointment and you see the word oil, that, to be honest with you, in our English language, it does not do it justice. I want you to think of maybe a perfume that would maybe not just be a liquid, but it would be more maybe of a salve. So I guess if we were gonna say, let's put these two things together. Take some Vaseline and mix it with some Aquavelva, except a more expensive cologne. And it's all together so that there would be an ointment effect to it, but there would also be an aroma to it. And it would be sealed, and it would be tightly sealed so that it did not really waft away, and the air would kind of ultimately cause it to be diffused, all right? So they would break these alabaster boxes of ointment, and that is what they would use for the anointing. Now, there are three occurrences in the New Testament where this happened with Jesus. It's in Matthew, it's in Mark, it's in Luke, and it's in John. All four of them, but they are not different and they are not all the same. There are two of them that are the same, and there's two others that are not the same. I want us to look at that tonight. First of all, I want you to go with me to the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 26. Now, Matthew 26, verses 6 through 13, it tells us the story about one of these anointings where that there was a lady that is giving this treatment and worship to Jesus. I want you to remember this. Remember Bethany. Now, when Jesus was in Bethany, I want you to remember this, in the house of Simon the leper. All right? There came unto him a woman having an alabaster box of very precious ointment and poured it on his head. Remember head. So Bethany, what was the other one I said? What? The leper, head set at meat. Look at a couple more verses. When his disciples saw it, they had indignation, saying, to what purpose is this waste? This is said twice. This time the disciples said it. The ointment, perfume might have been sold for much and given to the poor. Jesus understood, why you trouble you the woman? She hath wrought a good work upon me. The poor you always have with you. Me you don't always have. She's poured this ointment on my body. She did it for my burial. And then he says, wherever this gospel is preached to the whole world, it'll be a memorial for her. I've preached on that before. Now, when did this happen? If you read the text in Matthew 26, it happened 2 days before the Passover. Gospel of Mark, chapter 14, verses 3 through 9. Gospel of Mark, chapter 14, verses 3 through 9, if you're taking notes. And being in Bethany, we had Bethany and Matthew. The house of Simon the leper, we had Simon in Matthew. There's an alabaster box of ointment, very precious. She broke the box and poured it on his head. We had head in Matthew. All right? So, when did that happen? If you read the text, 2 days before Passover. So Matthew, Mark are identical. I want you to go with me to the Gospel of John, chapter 12. The Gospel of John, chapter 12. We're going to look at verse number 1. Then 6 days before the Passover came to Bethany. So, Matthew, Mark, 2 days before the Passover. Here in John 12, 6 days before the Passover came to Bethany, same town where Lazarus had been raised from the dead, whom he raised from the dead. Verse 2, they made a supper and Martha served. So this is the home of Martha, Mary, Lazarus. And Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. What had happened one chapter earlier? Jesus had raised him from the dead. Then took Mary the sister, Martha's sister, Lazarus's sister. She's not an unnamed woman. So what does she do? She anoints the feet of Jesus. So we know that it's not the same woman that was unnamed that anointed the head in the other two gospels that we've already looked at. The house is filled with the odor of the ointment. And so we are there in Bethany, which is the same house or same town, but here we are at Martha's house, or if you want to be more precise, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus's house. And there they were at a leper's house. All right, so you've got two different instances. Now, the one in Luke, go back to where we are at in Luke tonight. It says that we are here, and the man's name is Simon, but he is not identified as a leper. He's identified as a Pharisee. Can I tell you that a man that was a leper would have never been a part of the 70? They would have never let him be a part of the Sanhedrin. They just would not have done that. So you have Luke 7, that is the very first time that there's an anointing that takes place. When does this take place? Well, if you begin to read about it, it's probably about a year before Jesus is crucified. You take the others, and what do you have? One of them is 2 days, one of them is 6 days. And so there are three different instances in the Gospels. Matthew, Mark, same one. John and Luke are two extra ones. And so we see that this lady has now come, and she has this box, this jar, this perfume vase, whatever container title you want to give to it. It was something that was very, very special. One difference that I guess I should go ahead and say is the one about in John, there's not an alabaster box that's even mentioned there. It just says that Mary took a pound of spikenard. So in other words, it may not even have been in a box. It could have been that she just bought it from a store and it was worth 300 penny worth. There is not an amount that is placed on this one. And so those are the sacrifices that these women have made. Here we have this unknown woman. Now, we've seen the slight, we've seen the sacrifice of offering this ointment. But the third thing that I want you to see tonight is what I call the story. Now, the story is this woman comes in, has no intentions of sitting around the interior of that wall, listening to what's going on, just hoping to think one day, I wish that I could be like these guys. She doesn't have that on her mind at all. She simply knows that she is a sinner. She's coming to the one that she believes can take care of her sin. And so we see the story. Now, in this first situation with this woman, we see a sinner who knows she's a sinner. Look at verse 37. And it says, and behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus was set at meat in the Pharisee's house, she brought a box of ointment. If you look at verse 38, it says that she stood at his feet behind him weeping. So I want you to notice how she comes. Jesus is laying there, his feet unwashed because he was not given that courtesy. He's on his left elbow, and standing behind him is this woman that is a sinner, and she is weeping. So how does she get to his feet? He's laying down. She is standing. She has to kneel down. She has to show that she is a humble person. She has to show that there is contrition. And she is weeping before the one that she is hoping that is going to be able to give her some relief. Now, the woman is unnamed. But can I tell you that in Catholicism, you know who they say this woman is? They say it's Mary Magdalene. You say, where do they get that from? Well, they go to chapter 8, and because you have a woman that has evil spirits called Magdalene, Mary called Magdalene because she was from Magdala, they say, well, she was this woman, and so therefore, I forget which pope it was. It was some pope in the Middle Ages, and they said, this is what I'm telling you Mary Magdalene was, said she was a prostitute. That is not what the text says. Just like Mary Magdalene was not a prostitute, as far as we know, she was a godly woman. She did have evil spirits that were cast out of her, but it doesn't say that she walked the streets. Well, just as though it says that it came to pass afterward that he went throughout every city and village, seems to me like that he has gone from a different location. Well, if you get back up into where he's at this Pharisee's house, Mary Magdalene is not near where he is at. And so it's making a leap to say that this woman is Mary Magdalene. Now, I don't know if they conflate what's going on in the Gospel of John, where that it says that it was 6 days before the Passover, when this is our story is a year before the crucifixion. And so they make that leap. I'll go so far as to say that almost every commentator that I have read, they claim that this lady was probably a prostitute. Let me give you a rule of interpretation that you ought to write down and at least remember. Don't read something into the text that it doesn't say. If the text says it, run with it. But don't read into the text what is not there. I've talked about that when it comes to things like infant baptism. And they use the text in like Acts 16 where it talks about Lydia was saved and was baptized in her household. And they go, see there was babies. And so that's why we sprinkle babies. There's not a baby in that text. It just says household. Nobody can say what that household is. It could include servants. It could include teenagers. It could include grown adults. We don't know who's in there. We just know that when she got saved, everybody else in the house wanted to have some of the same thing. And so the rule is, don't read something into a Bible character that the text does not say. This does not say that she was a hooker, just like Mary Magdalene. It doesn't say that she was. It says that she had evil spirits cast out of her. This woman was a sinner, but we do not know what that sin is. So let's not make like we do. We don't know. Now in John chapter 8, there's a woman that's taken an act of adultery. We know that sin is there. Here, we don't know what the sin is. And so we see that we have a woman that she knows that she's a sinner. So she brings this perfume. We see her in her humility. We see her in her contrition. We see her in this. So she knows she's a sinner. But there's a second thing, or a second type of sinner we see, and this is the Pharisee, and he thinks he's righteous in himself. Much like that guide that I had one time, and somebody asked him, they said, honey, are you saved? He said, I've always been saved. I'm a Jew. You don't always get saved just because you was born to a race. You got to come to the Lord. And so you see this man, all right? So where is that man? Well, if you look, let me get my glasses on right here quick here. You see the second guy. Look at verse 39. And when the Pharisees which had bidden or invited him saw it, saw what this woman was doing. She had bowed down. She was crying. She was putting this ointment on his feet. She is wiping his feet with her hair. Her tears are mingled with this ointment. He sees this and he goes, he spake within himself, this man, if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that toucheth him, for she is a sinner. Yes, she is a sinner. But he didn't have enough sense to know that he also was. Now, one of the things that I loved about one guy named Linsky, that I just love this guy's writing, he said, her name is not mentioned, and so just write your name there. In other words, here she is. She has humbled herself before the Lord. Her name's not mentioned, so I can just write the name Tom down there next to it. Why? Because I'm a sinner like she is. So just because she's not mentioned, you just write your name down there. And so you see that this man, if he were a prophet, so there is skepticism. He's not buying this, because if he were a prophet, he wouldn't allow this woman to even touch him. Well, Jesus was different. There was a woman that had an issue of blood, and she reached down and she touched the tassel on his tallit, the garment that he was wearing. And all of a sudden, virtue went out of him, and he said, who touched me? You know who did it. And all of a sudden, she was trembling there. She touched him. Here, this woman, she is rubbing his feet. She is crying, mixing her tears with the ointment, and taking her hair and just wiping his feet. And he's going, if he knew what she was, he wouldn't allow that. And if he was a prophet, he would know it. But he's not a prophet. He's no ways Messiah, because Messiah would be prophetic. He would know it, and he would not allow that. Well, when you see that, then all of a sudden, Jesus answers him. And he said, Simon, I have somewhat to say unto thee. So let me tell you something. And so Simon says, Master or teacher, Rabbi, say on. Verse 41. There was a certain creditor, and this is our parable. This is the story, our parable for tonight. There was a certain creditor which had two debtors. The one owed 500 pence, and the other 50. So what you have is you have one that owed 10 times what the other one owed. One estimate is that the 500 pence, the 500 denarii would be roughly, it would be a year and a half of a common laborer's wages. So let's just think about this. If somebody, let's just say that they, just as a round figure, let's say they made $50,000 in a year. A year and a half would be $75,000. So just think, this guy would have to work to pay off a year and a half's worth of debt. Kind of reminds me of school debt. Second guy, he doesn't owe a year and a half of work. He owes a month and a half of work. So he doesn't owe $75,000. He owes $7,500. And so he says, there's two people here. One is deep in debt. One has got debt that he would like to get rid of, but it's only a tenth of what the first guy is. And so then Jesus said, and when they had nothing to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Evidently, he was in a good mood. And so when they both came and they said, work's been slack. We have not been able to really work any job. The economy's bad. They're not hiring right now. I've knocked on all kind of doors and nobody needs help right now. And the man is feeling generous. And he looks at both of them and he says, I forgive both of you. You don't owe me 75. You don't owe me 7,500 or 75,000 and 7,500. You're both forgiven. And they walk out thinking, man, that's pretty good. I'm telling you right now, you know, not owing a lot of stuff, that's a good thing. When I think about that, my father-in-law, he was kind of like one of the old school type guys. If he owed you a nickel, you were getting it. He didn't believe in owing somebody, and making them wait. When they first moved up here from Florida, they bought a house. And Julian and Pat's son-in-law, Eric, he did real estate. And he found them a house, which actually was next door to his house. And so they bought this house, and old Blue, he really liked old Eric. And so he told Eric after they got everything closed, he said, I appreciate how hard you've worked. And he said, we like being, here close to Deeb. That's what he called Debbie. We called her Deeb. And he said, tell you what I want to do is I want to take you and your wife out for a meal. And Eric's like, great, that's good. And so he was going to take Eric and Christy to wherever they wanted to go. Well, he was sick. That's why they moved from Florida up here. Well, he began to get sicker. And there were times that I would go and he would be there and it would be just so, so hard for him to even move. I would take him to have blood work done on Tuesdays and then I would take him again on Friday to basically take the cocktail that they had mixed for him and get that injected. And that was a weekly occurrence. And when he would get that injection or that blood transfusion that had some other stuff mixed with it, it would perk him up. And I can't tell you, probably three or four different times, he made the same statement. He would say, I owe that boy a dinner. He called Eric a boy. He said, I owe that boy a dinner. And I said, Blue, Eric is okay. He understands that you're sick and you can't take him out right now. He said, let me tell you something. He said, if a man don't keep his word and keep his promise, he's no good. I skipped a couple of words. He's no good. That was the code that he lived by. And that is a code that really we ought to live by. And so this man is forgiven these men that owed him. They feel good. So which one loved him more? And so Simon the Pharisee says in verse 43, I suppose, he knows the answer, all right? But maybe the people that are sitting around the wall and the woman that's over here crying at Jesus' feet, maybe he doesn't really kind of want to lose face with them by getting basically put in his place by a question from the Lord. I suppose he that was forgiven the most. And Jesus said to him, you have rightly judged. And then he begins to make a comparison. And this is where, if Simon had any sense whatsoever, he would see the wickedness of his own heart. But he does not. If you look at this comparison in verse 44, he said, seest thou this woman? In other words, evidently Simon had already turned his back on her And Jesus now calls his attention back to her. See her? He said, I entered into thine house and thou gavest me no water. There was no politeness, there was no courtesy that you offered me. But she hath washed my feet with tears and wiped them with the hairs of her head. Thou gavest me no kiss. You asked me to come eat, but you didn't treat me like a friend. You didn't treat me with honor. But this woman, since the time that I came, hath not ceased to kiss my feet. In other words, when I walked in and I reclined, the next thing I know, this woman is standing there behind me. The next thing I know, she's kneeling and she is weeping and she is crying and she is washing my feet and drying my feet and she's anointing my feet. She's doing this. And you didn't do that at all. If you keep reading in verse 46, my head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman hath anointed my feet with ointment. Wherefore I say unto thee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven. For she loved much. In other words, she showed her love. You know, sometimes the people that are saved from the most heinous lifestyles seem to have the deepest devotion to the Lord. I've known of people that have come from a very, very evil background, and I've known some that have come from, you know, just a sinful background. They just were born in sin. But if we're not careful, sometimes we'll begin to think a little more highly of ourselves. And instead of putting our name in the blank next to the unnamed woman, we kind of act like Simon the Pharisee. Well, I'm not as bad as so-and-so. When in reality, we're all sinners. And so he said that she has loved much, but to whom little is forgiven, the same loveth little. In other words, you've not done anything to me, for me, where you would even insinuate that you might want to put your trust in me. And so he looked to her and he said unto her, not to them, but to her, thy sins are forgiven. Now, verse 49 says, and they that sat at meat with him. So in other words, he's got some friends that are there. And I'm wondering, and I had this thought today as I'm finalizing this text in my mind. Did he give them a basin of water? Did he have a servant come wash their feet and just not do Jesus? Did he offer them a kiss on the cheek? Did he walk behind them as they were reclining and put droplets of oil on their head so that instead of smelling these people that are sitting around the wall, they've got something that's beautiful in their nostrils? I wonder if he did that with the others and excluded the Lord. The text doesn't tell us that. But I know that it says that they that sat at meat with him, it seems as though they all began to say this within themselves. Who is this that forgiveth sin also? In other words, does he think he is? Here this guy is. He drinks, eats with sinners. He hangs out with them at their house. You remember the tax collectors? These guys thought they were a lot better than those guys. Who does he think he is, talking about sins that are forgiven? And it's as though Jesus has just kind of just walked away from their conversation. He knows what they're thinking. And so what does he do? He gives these words to the one person there that wants it. And he said unto the woman, Thy faith hath saved thee. Go in peace. In other words, she came to the one that could help her. She humbled herself before the one that could help her. She showed her love to the one that could help her. And because she was willing to do that, she got help. Can I tell you that forgiveness of sin and peace go hand in hand? When you have forgiveness, there is something in your soul that's peaceful. The day that I got saved, it seems as though that I was walking on air because my whole life was different. I knew that I had been forgiven of my sins. And you probably remember something like that yourself. When you got saved, it was such a wonderful, wonderful experience. You had peace with the Lord, and no longer were you an enemy of God. And so, these two things always go together. And you and I need to remember that on our Christian fellowship journey, forgiveness of sin and peace still go together. It's not just in salvation, but it's in fellowship. That's why 1 John 1:9 is such an important passage for children of God. If we confess our sins, he's faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. I used to tell teenagers that's God's bar of soap. And so you and I, forgiveness is something that we always seek.